Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on insurance is a crime when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if your carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or fix his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor of law at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said about lawyers. He said it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, and do so without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. Well, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Well, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available at our school. It's available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Insurance is a crime. It's a crime because the creator of the universe said it's a crime. I didn't say that. I used to have insurance. I don't any longer, but I used to have a lot of insurance. I had auto insurance, health insurance, product liability insurance, fire, casualty, business, you name it, I had it. Most people do. And the more money you make, the more insurance you're inclined to buy. I'm not quite sure why that's the case. If you stop and think about it for a minute, the guy that's driving a Porsche makes $100,000 a year has an auto insurance policy, doesn't he? And the guy that's driving an old 85 Ford pickup, he too is driving a car with the same potential of causing damage as the lawyer with the $100,000 a year income and a Porsche to drive. But the attorney who's driving that Porsche pays a lesser percentage of his income for auto insurance, even though his car is more expensive, than does the guy with the 1985 Ford. Think about it for a minute. The poor guy gets impacted more than the guy who makes more money. The liability is the same. The potential is still the same. But the guy doesn't make as much money. And so he pays a larger percentage. The poor of the nation actually pay a larger percentage of their income to insurance than the wealthier, and the wealthier people really believe in it, and they want it. The poorer people aren't quite so sure they want to pay that kind of money for it, which is why we have so many people that are uninsured. And that's because you have to make a choice in life between paying the rent, eating, and then buying insurance. And the guy that's making $100,000 a year, $200,000 or $300,000, he doesn't have to worry about buying food, paying the rent. He's got plenty of money to do all of the above, and he can afford the insurance. Now, some years back, the legislatures here in America decided that we all needed insurance. It was good for everybody. And so we have what's called mandatory auto insurance. There still might be one or two states that don't have it, but by and large, the vast majority, you know, 40 states or 45 states or more, require that you buy this insurance. And I've often thought, if government can compel you to buy the product of one industry, like insurance, well, couldn't the government then require you to buy the services or the goods of any industry? Why is it limited just to insurance? And where does government get the power to compel you to buy insurance? They certainly do, but where does that power come from? Is there some clause in the Constitution that says thou shalt buy insurance, and if you don't, we'll put you in jail for 90 days? Well, it isn't in our Constitution, but it's certainly in our law, and there's good reason for it. I'm not arguing about the validity of the insurance. I mean, after all, most people believe in it. And the few of us that don't believe in it aren't in the debate. Let me explain the debate to you. You see, insurance is a given. Insurance is a given. Everybody needs insurance, and we're all fully persuaded that that's true. Now, with that given, the debate then is between insurance and insurance. It's never a debate between insurance or non-insurance. You know, if anybody had the gall to stand up and say, I don't think we should have insurance, I think it's a crime, everybody would gasp in horror and say, where did that fruitcake come from? Because we all know that insurance is necessary, imperative. You can't live without it. And so if somebody came in like I'm doing and saying, I think the debate should be between, should we have insurance or not at all? And my position is, I don't think we should have it at all. I think we should practice strict liability. Now, there was a time in America when we practiced strict liability, believe it or not. Strict liability is the opposite to limited liability. So when you buy insurance, your objective is to limit your liability. Now, here in our state, auto insurance is called, and it's derived from an act, which was enacted back in 1976. It's called the Financial Responsibility Act of 1976. How do you like that catchy title? The Financial Responsibility Act of 1976, which requires everybody to have liability insurance on their car. Tain't quite so. There's another way that you could provide this liability protection. It's by having a property bond. But the state doesn't advertise that, and the insurance companies don't advertise that, and they indeed don't want you to put up a property bond. It's the alternative to insurance, and it doesn't cost you anything. Instead of paying $800 a year in insurance premiums, you put up a bond instead. And the bond then, it could be a bond on your house, it could be a bond on your person, it could be a bond on something else. And what you're doing is pledging this piece of property. Now, in our state, they require $40,000 worth of liability coverage. Now, $40,000 isn't all that much. You know, most of you people out there that have a home have $40,000 worth of equity. Or if you have a business and so on, you could come up with that $40,000 worth of liability bond as opposed to insurance and save yourself $800 a year. But nobody tells you that part of the story. So leaving that aside, though, getting back to insurance as a given, the debate is between insurance and insurance. It's between mandatory versus voluntary. Mandatory versus voluntary, or fault versus no fault. The discussion is never between insurance versus no insurance. That's not a discussion that's ever on the table. And this is called total control of the debate. You see, the debate is totally controlled. That way, there is no other alternative. We're going to have insurance or insurance or insurance. Okay, and that's as far as that debate's going to go. So we're not going to talk about insurance or no insurance. We're just going to talk about insurance versus insurance versus insurance. And we want freedom here. See, in America, we talk a lot about freedom and freedom of choice. But if you don't have this insurance, you go to jail, or we're going to fine you, or take your license away, or we're going to take your car away. We're going to do something bad, wicked, terrible, awful, or evil to you if you don't voluntarily buy this insurance. Now, this insurance is also known as protection. So when Luigi comes into your store in New York and says, I want you to give me $100 a week to ensure that your store doesn't burn down, we call that a protection racket, and we brand it as a criminal activity. Now, when the legislature does the same thing, they call it insurance. Instead of a protection racket, it's called insurance. And we don't call it a racket, and we call it law and order. So we just hang different labels on it. Here in America, we have very strict laws against bribery. It's against the law to bribe a politician. And so we change the name, and we call it a campaign contribution. See how that works? So ordinary people are guilty of graft and bribery, but politicians are not guilty of anything because they got a campaign contribution. All right, it's hypocrisy, and let's just, you know, brand it for what it is, but that's the way it is. So in our discussion here of insurance as a crime, we ought to take a look at the scripture. Now, the scripture tells us whether or not something is good or bad. And the statute that we're looking for here is found in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. It's the strict liability statute. It's a few verses long, and it explains to you how we deal with a circumstance. The example given is a guy's got a bull or an ox, and this ox is known to the owner to cause harm or damage, and therefore he needs to do something to protect people from it. And it seems to be a little simplistic. Sometimes people say, well, that doesn't fit with modern law and business and so on. I don't know why. It's a simple illustration of a valuable principle of law, and that's called strict liability. If you cause somebody a damage, you pay for it. If you're building a fire on your side of the fence and it gets away and goes over on the other side of the fence and burns up a guy's cornfield, you need to pay him for his corn. That's strict liability. Now, of course, that guy's corn might be worth $100,000, and we don't want to be liable for $100,000. We want to burn our leaves over here on our side of the fence, but we don't want to be responsible for keeping the fire under control. And we sure as hell don't want to pay for that guy's cornfield. So we go out and we buy a casualty policy. And, well, you know, I could have an accident over here. And then there's another side to this. It's called the bet. And they give you odds. And, you know, you don't put up $100,000 worth of property to get a $100,000 insurance policy. So you only put up a portion called margin. So you only put up a margin, and they give you odds on the bet. It's like betting on a crap table. You know, you want to play the field. You want to get odds. What's the odds on a 12 or a 2? Well, it's a 30 to 1. It's not the correct odds, but it's odds nevertheless. And the insurance company, they never give you correct odds, but they give you odds nevertheless. Well, let's take a look at a particular type of insurance, auto insurance, over here, and let's take a look at all the factors that go into it over here. Let me show you something about it. God, on the one hand, requires that you be totally responsible for all of your debts, but he doesn't require that you pay $800 a year in auto insurance. And if you were to save that $800 a year over a period of years, you'd have a pretty good-sized fund to pay off any auto claims. So the auto insurance industry says, oh, my God, there was a wreck up in Michigan, and the payout was $1 million. Could you afford $1 million? Well, all of us would say, well, no, we can't. Well, see why you need insurance. Well, let me ask you this. How many of you people out there have $1 million casualty policy? You know, none of you do. You've got $100,000, maybe $200,000, but you don't have $1 million. And so the illustration is off point and out of context, coming right out of the chute. But the insurance company uses that in order to persuade you that you need to buy insurance. Not that they're persuading you need to buy $1 million insurance policy, but you need to buy insurance. Do you know what the average auto collision costs an insurance company, on average? Do you know how many wrecks there are? How many vehicle crashes occur in the United States in a given year? Have you ever taken a look at the numbers? Because if you did, you'd see how profitable it is. I mean, this insurance business is profitable. I mean, god-awful profitable. Well, for the insurance company, it doesn't do anything for you or me, but it's very profitable for insurance companies. So I got online, and I got some numbers here for you. So get your pen and paper out here, sharpen your pencil on both ends, and let's go to work here, and we'll write down some numbers here. Let me show you how profitable this insurance is and what a bad program this is for you and for me. Wonderful program for the insurance industry. I don't deny it. I mean, if I was selling insurance, God, I'd be jumping up and down, hooping and hollering, hey, buy more, buy two. But if I have to pay the premiums over here and I take a look at what am I going to get for this, and I take a look at the peanuts that I get and the real money I have to pay to get it, I'm going, hey, wait a minute, this is a ripoff. So if you thought it was a ripoff, wait until you get the numbers there. Here in the United States, and I'm going back to 1994, which is a few years back, it really doesn't make any difference what year. You could use 1970 or 50 or 2000 or whatever year you want to get numbers. All that's changing here is that, for instance, the total drivers that were licensed in 1994 in America was 175 million. All that's going to happen here is that today there will be more licensed drivers today than there were then. But the percentages stay essentially the same. The number of vehicle fatalities, the number of serious injuries, you know, per mile driven or for a given population or a population age and so on, it stays fairly the same, you know, year after year. So we get about 175 million drivers, but there's 192 million automobiles. Just about one car for each driver in America. There's a few more cars than there are people, but, you know, a few of them are probably going to be in the shop from time to time. So on any given day, we have a car available to us. Now, the total number of crashes that occurs in the United States is right at 17 million crashes per year. Right at 17 million. So that's 17 million crashes out of 175 million drivers. So right away you say, woo, that's quite a few. Let's take 17 and divide that by 175. And we get about, well, let's see, that's 9%, 9.7, about 10%, round numbers. Round it off to 10%. So your chances of having a vehicle accident are about 10%, based upon the total number of drivers and the total number of cars and the total number of crashes. Now, the total vehicles involved in crashes was 27 million. So you had 16 million crashes, but in some cases, you'll have five or six cars involved in a crash, in a particular accident, can have two or more vehicles involved, the total injury vehicles. So out of these 27 million cars involved in auto accidents, about 4 million of them will involve an injury. So most of the time, when you have a crash, let's just take 27 million cars, and you're riding in one of these cars, and you're involved in one of these 16 million crashes, your chances of being injured are only 4 million out of that 27 million. So let's just take 27 and then divide that by 4. 4 sevens is 28, so it's about 7, right, rounded off to 7. So you have 7 automobile crashes and out of seven, one of them will have an injury in it. So your chances of being injured in one of these crashes isn't very good. It's only one out of seven. Most crashes occur, and they don't have any injuries, and they have some property damage. Let's take a look at property damage here. The total damages of all descriptions is $150 billion a year. Now, that's a lot of money, $150 billion a year. Total property damage to the vehicles is $23 billion. So if we were to take 150, you know, we'll just round this off, 150, and then we subtract 23 from that, would leave us with 127. So $127 billion is in personal injury. So most of the damages that we experience are we got hurt in the car wreck. You know, we had to go to the hospital. And it costs more to fix people than it does to fix cars. So as a result of that, 41% of cars that are out there on the street, 41% now are insured. I round it off. 40% of cars are insured. Well, then what does that mean? 60% of cars are. They're uninsured. Now, get this. Every state in the union, save for one or two, maybe New Hampshire or Vermont or someplace, doesn't have a compulsory auto program or auto insurance program, but for practical purposes, the whole country is wired to mandatory insurance. And get this. Even with the laws on the books, 60%, that's six cars out of every 10. Next time you're driving down the road, count 10 cars on the other side coming to you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Six of those 10 cars are uninsured. Now, of course, you're insured. You're one of those four that is insured. But I just wanted to point out to you that 60%, in spite of the law, are driving out there uninsured anyway. So the mandatory insurance requirement over here isn't working. And that's number one. And number one doesn't work because you don't have 90 or 95% compliance, even though you got 90 or 95% requirement. Now, 90% of cars in the inner cities, you know, in downtown Chicago, downtown Los Angeles, downtown New York, right, 90% of those cars are uninsured. Did you get that number down? Write that down. Don't forget that one. And there's a good reason for that, because in Los Angeles County, California, if you live in Los Angeles County and you want to buy auto insurance, it's not $800 a year, it's $3,500, and this is back in 1994. So while the national average is $8, if you want to buy insurance inside an inner city area, it's $35. So let's take 35 divided by 8. You know, it's four times more expensive in the inner cities, which tells you that the people that live in the inner cities, they want to drive too. And the guy that lives in the inner city, if he's poor, you know, let's say he's making $25,000 a year. Let's just take a number. A welfare mom making $25,000, just scraping by. Not making the median average, you know. The median average income here in the United States is now up to about $47,000 a year, last time I saw a number. That means half the people of America make $47,000 or more, and half the people make $47,000 or less. Well, you know, there's the bottom side of the $47,000, and a lot of those people make $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. You know, people that are on Social Security, and maybe they've got a little retirement to boot, you know, if those people are making $20,000, they're doing pretty well. Now, let's take those people. Don't they want to drive, too? And if they live in Los Angeles, Chicago, you know, someplace, they got to pay $3,500 a year. Now, why does the insurance company charge those people $35 and they charge people like me $8? In fact, it's less than that. Here, it's about $600 a year. See, I live out here in the country, and they charge us about $600 a year for auto insurance, but you people in the cities now paying $3,500, and the national average is $800. Huh? Okay. And then this guy who's living in the cities, just take his number. Say he's making $25,000 a year. And then let's divide that by 3,500. It takes one-seventh of his income just to buy his auto insurance without fire insurance and life insurance and health insurance or anything else. Just the auto insurance would take, you know, one-seventh of it. If you take 100 and you divide that by 7, you'd get 14. So it's about, you know, it's pushing 15% of his income just for that one item. Hey, what do you think of that? Now, about talking about injuries over here, now listen to this. About one in four auto accidents has a minor injury. And so four wrecks, you get a minor injury in one of them. And out of 267 auto accidents, you'll have one moderate injury. And then about one in 100 auto accidents has a serious injury. About one in 1,000 auto accidents has a severe injury. About one in 2,500 auto accidents has a critical injury. And about one out of every 400 auto accidents has a fatal injury. So when we're talking about, you know, critical injuries, severe injuries, serious injuries, even moderate injuries, It's very, very rare. You know, to get a moderate injury, you gotta have 267 wrecks to get a moderate injury. You gotta have 100 wrecks to get a serious injury. You gotta have 1,000 wrecks to get a severe injury. You gotta have 2,500 wrecks to get a critical injury. You gotta have 400 wrecks to get a fatal injury. I mean, you know, if you were listening to the auto insurance industry out there, you know, getting in the car and failing to buckle your seatbelt takes your life in your hands. Truth of the matter is, when was the last time you were involved in an auto accident? So you just think back, you know, when was the last time you... Now, it is true, some people drive more than others, and it's helpful if we calculate these auto accidents based upon the number of miles driven. You know, the exposure that you have. A truck driver who's driving, let's say, 500 miles a day, 5 days a week, 2,500 miles a week, 2,500 times, so say, 50 weeks in a year, he drives more than 100,000 miles a year. You know, the average Joe Sixpack is only driving 15,000 miles. And surprisingly, that truck driver will have fewer accidents than the guy who's driving 15,000. The guy who's got more experience is probably a little better driver. And he's able to anticipate problems and potential problems, and so he avoids that. I know when I'm driving with people, I used to drive truck for years, you know, and when I'm riding with people, they just terrorize me. Just scare the living hell out of me. Especially driving too close, you know, to the car ahead, because I'm sitting here in the passenger seat, and I'm riding with you down the road, and I'm sitting here based upon my experience, and I used to drive that 500 miles a day, so I've got that 100,000 miles a year plus, and I know that when you slam on the brakes, you cannot possibly get stopped before you hit that guy in the rear end, and so, you know, just prudence on my part, you know, I like to gauge my speed with the guy up ahead, and so, you know, if he slams on his brake because a coon runs across the road, and there's people out there who do that, you know. If I see a coon run across the road, I don't swerve and roll my car over and down the embankment over there to miss the coon. I just crash into the coon straight and level straight ahead and kill a sucker. That's what I'd do. I remember my first wife, she'd driving her car and had three young women in the car with her when she was in college. And a cat crossed the road, and so she swerved to miss the cat and ran off the road and rolled the car over a couple times and put all four of them in the hospital over a crummy cat. Now, of course, your cat lovers out there would say, well, God love her. God bless her. I never did value a cat as high as I did a human being. I'm a little different than most people, I guess. So I just thought I'd throw that out there for you. No, it is true. I don't deny it. There's miles driven come into this. But the general rule of thumb is, from the insurance company's point of view, they don't care if you're driving 100,000 miles a year or 15. You know, when you have an accident and they have to pay off, cost them the same amount of money, no matter how much experience you get. But they give you lower rates. You know, if you're an old man, 50 years old, driving 100,000 miles and never had an accident, why, they give you a lower rate than a 16-year-old kid that doesn't know which pedal to push to get a certain reaction. And so, the insurance companies, they're not dumb either, you know. Now, the average auto insurance premium is $800, so jot that one down. Victims with losses exceeding $100,000 recover 9%. What do you think of that? That's quite a number, isn't it? Let's suppose that you're out here and you have one of these critical or moderate injuries over here and you go to the hospital and maybe you lost a leg in the process. You know, you had an auto accident and you had to amputate your leg. Now you have a permanent disability, and let's assume for the sake of our discussion over here that this permanent disability costs you $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. What's your chances of getting paid by the insurance industry? Assuming that I've got insurance. See, I mean, I'm not running around uninsured. I've got the insurance. But what do you think your chances of collecting that $100,000 or $200,000 are? Well, the answer is 9%. How do you like that? Now, you thought that insurance was for the purposes of making people whole, and that we all buy the insurance and put the money into a pool, and that the insurance company are nice guys over there, and when these events transpire, you know, that they're there to help. Well, they ain't there to help if the damage is $100,000 or more. At least they're not there to help 91% of the time. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, so that we can satisfy the FCCs around the world and make sure that everybody knows who we are, where we're from, and what we're doing here. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can also be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package So be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. You can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about insurance as a crime. It's a crime not because I say so or because the government's opposed to it. It's a crime because God Almighty, the creator of the universe, calls it a crime. He has a different agenda, a little different program here, and I told you, you'll find it in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. That's Exodus chapter 21, second book of the Bible, 21st chapter, verses 28 through 36. The correct modality here, then, from God's point of view, is called strict liability. Insurance is limited liability. Now, the reason we practice limited liability is because we're smarter than God. I mean, let's just face it. God is old. He's probably kind of senile, feeble, doesn't know what the hell's going on in the modern world, the modern age, and so therefore, you and I take license then. We say, well, this old guy, he doesn't know what the hell's going on in life, so let's fix his mistakes. And so we fixed his mistake here with auto insurance. And so I stopped here, took our break, by pointing out to you that when you have one of these accidents, if it's a serious accident, and it involves $100,000, you ain't getting paid 90% of the time. Period. End of the report. Now, the victims with losses between $25,000 and $100,000, they recover 56%. And if you have a loss of $5,000 or less, your rate of recovery will be up around 99%. So like a casino, if you have a little win, they pay like a slot machine, the bells go off and whistles, and some pretty girl comes over and she pays off, and there's all this hoopla, and photographs are taking the lucky winner. Now, how many times have you seen that happen with $1 million payout? All right, the rest of my case. Insurance companies don't pay off on big cases, they pay off on little cases. That makes us all feel good because they're going to pay out on $1,000, $5,000 cases. And that makes, you know, 1,000 people or 5,000 people feel real good, and so they sell more insurance. Now, for the few people that are going to have this $100,000 casualty, there's not very many anyway. I mean, it's as rare as hen's teeth. But when one happens, the insurance company doesn't pay any better than Joe Sixpack. It doesn't have any insurance, or marginally better. Now, back in 1994, the insurance industry took in $107 billion worth of premiums and paid out $11 billion worth of claims. So their gross profit margin is 89%. Put another way, for every dollar's worth of premium they bring in, they pay out 11 cents. I don't know if that's excessive, and I don't know if that's good or bad or right or wrong. There are a lot of people out there that write and articles and stories and experts and economists, and they say that it's god-awful bad and getting worse. And the auto industry, the auto insurance industry, on the other hand, they complain about it not being enough. I can remember I broke in and was trained as an insurance adjuster back about, 1964, 5, 6, long in there somewhere. And back in those days when I was in the business, the auto insurance industry was paying out 5 cents for every dollar they took in. And then over the years, it grew steadily from 5% to 11%, which is about where it is today. Now, I don't know of very many businesses that have that kind of a profit margin. In fact, the profit margin in insurance is so great that on the initial sale, they pay the salesman 50%. So if you sign up to buy insurance, and let's say you pay a premium, your first premium is $500. Well, the insurance agent gets $250, and the insurance company gets $250. Now, next year, the insurance company gets the full $250, but they pay the agent 5%. This is called a residual commission, a renewal commission. So every time you renew the policy. All right, now in Camden, New Jersey, there's an example of a man and his wife and a 17-year-old daughter that pay $2,000. Did you get that? $2,000. In Pasadena, California, that same man, wife, and 17-year-old son pay $4,700. $4,700 a year. Notice the disparity here. In Camden, New Jersey, evidently, the insurance industry believes that a 17-year-old girl is probably a better risk than a 17-year-old boy in Pasadena, California. And I just threw that in there to give you some idea of the disparities. As I pointed out here in Isabella, Missouri, the insurance rate, you know, typically around here is $600 a year. Nationwide, it's $800 a year. In Camden, New Jersey, it's $2,000 a year, and, you know, most of us have teenagers. So if your teenager's going to drive your car from time to time, you know, they kind of sock it to you. Now, there's another way to do this. I don't know if I mentioned this yet, but you could have a property bond. Property bond, that's what I do. I put up a property bond. And what that means is I've got a 40-acre piece of ground over here that's free and clear, and it's worth more than $40,000. And so the state here has a program. You know, if you can buy insurance, you can buy a property bond. Most people will put up a bond. They go to the insurance company to get a bond. You don't have to buy a bond from an insurance company. You know, you can put up your own. And so I put up a bond, and what that means is, let's suppose I have a car wreck, and the damages in the wreck are $50,000. Well, what that means is that if I don't pay that $50,000, then the state's going to come over and take my piece of property that I pledged for it, the bond, and they're going to sell it, and then they're going to give it to the guy, and then up to $50,000, and then if it sells for $100,000, they'll give me the other $50,000, or something on that order. Now, the thing that's good about that is that the $600 a year, you know, that I would be spending on auto insurance, I put that over here in my slush fund can. I got a can over here called the Princess Cruise Slush Fund. Better mark right on the coffee can. So the way I keep track, I don't have a bank account, so I have to have a way to sort money out, and so I have coffee cans. And I just put the money in the coffee can. So every year I take $600 that you and I would have to spend on insurance, and I put it in my cans. Now, how much money am I going to save over the long haul? Because this is really the kicker here. An insured driver can expect one accident every 33 years. Did you know that? If you want to know how often the insurance industry expects you, the normal run-of-the-mill good driver, you know, old farts like us, it's once every 33 years. How much money do you think you're going to need to pay for that one accident every 33 years on average? Huh? What do you think? Well, the answer is $1,835. So write that down. If you just took all the drivers in America, that 175 million, and put them out on the road, now some of those guys are going to have 10 wrecks. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I had two accidents. Now I'm an old man, 70. And in my lifetime, I've had two accidents. Both of them were before I was 18 years old. Both of them when I was a teenager. You learn as you go along. And, you know, I learned how to drive, and then I got better and better at it. And so as time has gone on. All right, so I've been driving longer than 33 years. Now, I've had my two wrecks. And that's my average for my lifetime. Then I started driving at age 16, and today I'm 70. Okay, so let's just try that out. That's 54, 64, 70. So for 54 years, 33 and 33 is 66. See, I've had a little bit more than my average so far. So far, I've had a little bit more than my average. But if you're an average driver right now, today, starting out in your lifetime, you can expect to have one wreck every 33 years, and you're going to cause $1,835 worth of damage. Now, let's multiply this out, and let me show you where your savings come in. If you were paying $800, this is your average, $800 a year times 33 years, it would be $26,400. So write that down. Came right off my Texas Instruments EL1197G3 calculator. $26,400. So every 33 years, you can expect to pay in about $25,000. And I just rounded off $25,000. Every 33 years, you can expect to have one auto accident that costs $2,000. Take $2,000 from $25,000, and it ends up at $23,000. So you should make $23,000. Put it another way. The insurance industry is going to take $23,000 off of you, and they're going to pay out $2,000. Isn't that special? I'll give you the right numbers. Here's $26,400. And let's just divide that by 1,835. They make $14 for every dollar they pay out. $14 for every dollar they pay out. Now, I say that's pretty good money, wouldn't you? Now, why don't you make $14 for every dollar you pay out? You know, put up a property bond, cover your accidents, drive carefully, just like you always do. Save the money in your coffee can over here, and at the end of 33 years, you'll have $23,000. Now, could you use that $23,000 more effectively, or put it to better and more beneficial use for you than the insurance company? That's your choice. I didn't come here to sell you insurance or to sell you non-insurance. I just want to tell you what the numbers were. Now, an insured driver can expect an accident once every 33 years. Every driver can expect one accident every 10 years. Every 10 years. See, there's a lot of drivers out there that are uninsured, and uninsured drivers aren't as good as insured drivers. Now, can you qualify for insurance? I remember in the Bobby Angelini, he had a 57 Chevy. He wrecked that car three times the first year. Bought it brand new in 57, wrecked it three times in 1 year. Why, that car was in the shop more than it was on the road. Of course, Bobby was under 25, and, you know, us guys under 25, you know, we're out there showing off, and we don't drive quite as good, you know, as girls do, and so on. And so when you get down on the bottom line over here, we wreck more cars, cause more damages, and then they take your insurance away, or they load you up with Lloyd's of London. I remember Bobby back in the 1950s was paying $500 a year. When I was paying $46 a year, Bobby Angelini was paying $500 a year, and he had an assigned risk plan with Lloyd's of London. Can you believe that? 48% of all accidents are unreported to the police. Huh? Huh? 21% of injury accidents are unreported to police. Well, if they're unreported, how do the police know that? Well, what they do is they take samples every once in a while. They ask people questions. I remember I had a wreck one time. I wasn't driving, but my driver was driving. I have a truck and trailer, you know, coming down CY Road or Boulevard, I guess it is, in Casper, Wyoming. Snow floor. And I'm sitting over here in the passenger seat, and I looked over the driver. I said, "You're driving too fast." And I hardly got the words out of my mouth. He let off the gas, and the traffic light up ahead turned to yellow. Now, here you are, you know. And I just said to the guy, I said, "You're driving too fast." I wanted to slow down. And when he slowed down, the two cars ahead of us stopped. And one of them looked like a Porsche to me. That was the lane we were in. The other one was a Bronco, a Ford Bronco. I'll give you a little ad here for a Ford Bronco. And I said to him, I said, "Hit the Bronco, hit the Bronco, hit the Bronco." And so he changed lanes, and of course we're sliding down the road, and he hit the Bronco, and then he knocked that Bronco out into the intersection. And we got out, of course, and we got to call the cops now, you know, one thing or another. Well, the Bronco didn't have any damage. Of course, the guy that was riding in it, you know, he was a little ticked off, you know. And you hit some guy with a big truck, you know, and knock him out into the intersection, and well, he gets out of the car, you know, he's a little bummed out. So I said, "Hey, why don't you just drive over there, and let's get out of the intersection here, and let's settle up." And so we drove over to park, and he got out and he took a look at his car and he said, "Well, there's no damage." I said, "God, that's a hell of a good car you got there, that Bronco." I said, "Sorry to do that to you, but you know, we were in the other lane." He said, "Yeah, I was watching you in my mirrors." And I said, "That little car, you know, if we would have hit that little car over there, hell, that guy would have got hurt." And I said, "Hell, hit that Bronco." And so we did and didn't cause any damage. Now here, I've got this big truck. The bumper's ripped off my truck. Well, he ripped off us, all banged up, you know. So I had about $500 worth of damage on my big rig, but he didn't have any damage at all. So I said, "Well, listen, you know, if we report this, my insurance is going to go up. And I think we can settle this right here." I said, "Your feathers are rumpled. Let me give you $100 for your bad experience." And he said, "Make it $200 and we got a deal." So I reached in my pocket and gave him two Benjis, $200 bills, and got in the truck and drove off. Now, you know, normal people, you know, they want to call the cops out there and go to the hospital and create a big scene over this. And this guy, he wasn't injured, and I wasn't injured, and my driver wasn't injured, and it's nobody's business but ours. But hey, wait a minute, we got laws over here, don't we? And you see, the police come out here, now they could issue a ticket. They would issue a ticket to us, you know, for following too close or imprudent driving, and that would cost us another $100 or $200. See, the state likes to get into the act. Not that anybody was hurt, not that it was any of their business, but because they have an excuse here to levy a tax. This is a hit the Bronco tax. See? I just want to pass that one on to you so that you follow along with it. All right, so there's the insurance statistics for auto insurance. And the key to all of this is that if you have auto insurance and you have an accident, then you cause somebody $100,000 in damage and you bought this so that you could pay that guy, you can rest assured that your insurance company is not going to pay him. He would stand a better chance of collecting from you than he's going to collect from the insurance company, and the insurance company is going to screw him out of his money. So if you're buying this to protect the other guy, you can forget that. Now, if you're buying insurance to protect you, you think that your insurance company is going to protect you, remember that if the amount in controversy is between $25,000 and $100,000, it works the same way for you as it works for the other guy. They'll pay 56% of it on average, and if it's over $100,000, they'll pay 9% of it on average, and you'll take it in the shorts the rest of the time. So I'm sitting here saying, why in the hell do we need insurance if 90% of the time they ain't going to pay us? We're going to pay the premiums 100% of the time, or you ain't going to get the coverage. But if you pay your premiums 100% of the time and it's a big claim, 90% of the time they ain't going to pay it, and half the time on a moderate claim they ain't going to pay. So I'll just leave it up to you. And I'll point this out to you as we progress along. You can have hurricane insurance in Biloxi, Mississippi, and you ain't going to get paid. You can pay your premiums, but you're not going to get paid when you have a hurricane. Well, at least most of the time. Now, that doesn't mean insurance companies don't ever pay off. They pay off, and they pay off handsomely a lot of the time. My point is that they don't pay off the way we think they pay off, and the business doesn't run the way we thought it was being run. Now, when we take a look at this debate over here, you know, the clergy sells insurance. I mean, your preacher would tell you that you need to have insurance. The government sells insurance. They pass laws and require you to buy insurance. Insurance companies sell insurance, and they put ads on the air all the time telling you that you ought to have insurance. Your parents have insurance, and your parents sold you on the idea of insurance and told you that only a lunatic wouldn't have insurance. Now listen to this. You got the clergy, the government, the insurance companies, and your parents all telling you that you need insurance. The preacher should be telling you you shouldn't have insurance and you should be practicing strict liability because that's what God tells you. The government shouldn't be telling you to have insurance or anything else any of the time. It's none of their damn business. So it's a question for you and your parents to decide. And your parents, if they hadn't been sold by the clergy and the government, probably wouldn't have insurance, and probably you wouldn't either. And insurance is a fairly modern phenomenon, if you think about it. You know, you go back 1,000 years, how many people were carrying buggy insurance or ox cart insurance? Insurance, in reality, came into existence about the year 1536 at the Hanseatic League in Hamburg, Germany. It's not the exact year. I mean, it's been around for thousands of years, the concept of limited liability. But in modern times, it's the Hanseatic League that started insuring ships and limiting liability. That what we need to do is to have a system, because of the hazards and perils of the sea, by which a merchant can be indemnified if the cargo or the gold sinks. Now that's where it got started. And now today, that insurance, which used to be maritime insurance, which had its limits at the high tide mark, now permeates all of society worldwide. Everybody's practicing insurance. And there are penalties to pay. And as we progress along, I'll show you what these penalties are. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And when we violate the law of God, we violate the Ten Commandments, we violate the strict liability statute here in Exodus 21, you and I and everybody that violate that law pay a penalty. That's all. It's just that simple. So if you want to pay the penalty, buy more insurance. Get in line and do your thing. But this insurance, especially auto insurance, has gone awful profitable. I'll show you how profitable fire insurance is. It's a little bit more profitable than auto insurance. Health insurance, you know, we're paying $12,000 a year for health insurance. Hey, the insurance companies are raking it in. And as we progress along, I'll show you how to get off the insurance wagon altogether and put all of those premiums into your pocket, where they'll probably do you a hell of a lot more good than the insurance company's premiums are going to do you. Hey, I'm about out of time here, boys and girls. I'm going to have to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. Hey, we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night.